ました。エリシアキャンチ。
Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's Crosstalk, we focus our attention on round two of the UK National Trophy at the new venue in Milnthorpe, which proved to be just as enticing on the ground as it sounded from the previews that we had from Dave Haygarth in the last show. We also talk through all the action from the first round of the Super Prestige in Heaton that brought us some really close and action-packed racing in a season favourite venue. We're going to be joined in the pits by some of the Trinity Racing team, including a Mr. Tom Pidcock and Cameron Mason. In the last round, we look forward to a packed fortnight with the first of the European World Cups, this time in Switzerland, in Bern, and the next two rounds of the Super Prestige in Boom and Hervre. We're going to get the next instalment of Helen's 100 Seconds, focusing on the Bern World Cup, and we're going to get views from friend of the show, Christian Rocker, the World Cup organiser, and of course, the coordinator of that Swiss series, the EKC Tour. We're going to give you everything you need to know about round three of the UK National Trophy up on the Scottish coast, including course info from the man with the plan, JP, in Irvine. As usual, I'm joined in the studio by Matt Payne and Bruce Dalton. Now, some listeners might know that after we had recorded the last show, Matt had an injury that, well, it certainly concerned me, and it was obvious to those who were keeping a close eye on the British cycling stage at Milnthorpe. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm here. I'm still talking. I think I still sound the same. I'm still hopping about on crutches a bit. I know a lot of people didn't actually know of Milnthorpe, but in the week before, I'd actually been in and out of the hospital, and tests are still ongoing. Basically, I've crashed my bike too much in the past, and it's all catching up with me now that I'm getting older. But the only good news is the consultant is a keen cyclist, and the recommendation is to get on my bike and ride more, would you believe? I'm not allowed to walk anywhere. And certainly at Milnthorpe, I was out trying to set record speeds down the corridors on crutches down the Holiday Inn. I got told off by the staff there three times. Sorry, Holiday Inn, for trying to be silly on the crutches. However, lots more riding for me, which is great for my bike riding, if nothing else. Not very good for anything else. It's like walking. But I've got to say a massive thank you to two people who stepped in, to Bruce and Neil, because it was a bit of a crosscast threesome up there, and it was great fun. It was something a bit different than we've not tried for a little while, having multiple people there. Bruce, you got to play pretty much first. How was it being on the microphone instead of having people talking about you?
Well, you can all be chat at the beginning of before any of the racing kicks off, and then as soon as it happens, I have a lot more respect for you, Matt. It's actually quite hard for any of you listening to this thinking Matt just stands up there and has a monologue for an hour. It's really hard to keep on top of the racing, and Matt was there to keep an eye on me and happily duel it out as well on the mic. But no, really good. I think the racing proved again to be fantastic. Some really good battles on that first day as well as on the second day, as we'll talk about later in the show. But I don't know, how did you find it, Neil? Interesting, different? What was your takeaway?
Well, it was all of those, and as you say, it's a very, very different experience on the show like this. If anyone stumbles like I just did, then you can edit it out afterwards. So normally, if you're listening to it, you don't get to hear those bits and pieces. But you know, when you're on the mic and someone rides past you and then you start a sentence talking about them, and then you have that mental block and you think, oh no, which one is that? Because you're just seeing them from behind and you're not quite sure which rider it is for that team. It's a tough gig, but it was a lot of fun.
You both did brilliant, and it was really interesting. There were two very different styles from both of you on the mic when you were there, and it really did show the difference perspectives that you both have from the racing, which was really good in how we bounced it across. And obviously going there not knowing whether I could stand up for 5 minutes, never mind sort of survive the end of the weekend, it certainly made a difference. But it was really interesting watching both of you in action and learning really, really quickly. And The only thing I can say, I have 20 years of doing this plus. And the key thing, once you start thinking about what you're saying, you're in trouble.
Round one was totally internationally packed. But the second round of the National Trophy was far more focused on domestic riders. Although, to be fair, we did see three different nationalities on the elite podiums in the end. The ground conditions were continually and constantly changing, and we saw an elite women's race that was dominated by Timo Race's Hattie Harnden. She was certainly happy at the finish. Hattie Harnden won the race. Second and third, it was a close battle, really close battle, between PH Mass Paul Milne Cycles' Millie Cousins over Scott Racing's Sophie Thackeray, who finished in third. The men's race was won by Neon Velo's Ian Field. Second was Bomtrack's Gus van der Meer. And third was Cycling Ireland's David Conroy. I thought it was some really exciting, interesting riding. I loved racing it. I also really enjoyed watching it.
It was great to watch. I thought that that was one of the best national trophies we've had for years. I was blown away, not just because of the meds, because the racing was awesome. It was really, really good. I mean, the women's race, you had a race where the positions were changing, where you had quality right the way through. The technical nature of that race showed just how good our riders are, because it was so, so tough. But people were having to think in the difference in styles between riders. I mean, youngsters like Millie Cousins, I mean, she has come on leaps and bounds, absolutely flying up there. And take nothing away from the fact that Hattie won, we know she's a winner. But Millie and Sophie's race all the way into the end was great. And part of that's a tribute to the course design, obviously. But the venue lended itself to being able to see it. But the men's race was just as good. I mean, it was pretty mad all the way through. And all the way through that race, there was battles on the way through. There was jams. There was tactical positioning. There's some serious dive bombing going on up there. There was some really dodgy manoeuvres in there. But I actually enjoyed just watching the course practice, which was really good. Actually seeing everybody trying to work out what to do out and round the course. And Bruce, you must have found that when you were out there racing in that men's race. It was pretty packed and pretty hectic, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was caught up in a crash at the start. There was by the end of the weekend, everyone piling off the start finish straight just went straight into a run. And races early on in the weekend were cruising over the top of the hill, and there was maybe a few riders who'd ride all the way up to the top of it. By the end of our race, no one had ridden over the top of the crest of that hill. And like you say, it was very frenetic in terms of how the racing played out, because, to be honest, it was such a challenging course with all that mud and the rain that had sort of then washed over on the Saturday night. It really changed the conditions massively from Neil's race, despite us having those running off-camber banks that we saw for both races.
Yeah, I mean, the conditions totally changed through the weekend. It was like a different course, and there are things that I could ride at the end of my race that were unrideable at the beginning. And then there were things that were totally unrideable, like most of the course by the time Sunday came. I mean, the difference between the Saturday and the Sunday, there'd been a huge dumping of rain overnight. And it did stop just before the first race on the Sunday.
It was probably the race of the season, and possibly the last four or five seasons. And I think all the way through, there was lots of little touches by Dave and his team that were there from the Northwest Cyclocross Association that made it good. I walked on site. Well, I didn't. I was driven on site. But I saw right on the gatepost loads of people looking at a massive site map going, oh, look, that's over here and that's over there. And there was all these little touches of just little things where you could see Dave had thought about it, where he'd ridden the course, where the turn, the 180-degree turn, they changed that subtly because too many people were riding it on the Saturday in practice, and they just moved the post, and it must have been 2 inches, 5 centimetres they moved it. Everybody had to think about it then on the way through, and that was that level of detail. You don't often see that, certainly not on a first event, and that's what we've seen from Dave and the team. And the racing was really good. The riders made it. The pit crews, well, I think Neil maybe ought to really sort of be thankful he wasn't down in the pit, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. They were certainly very, very busy on the Sunday, perhaps less so on the Saturday. But just to unpack a little bit of what happened, especially in the elite women's race, that last lap where, okay, we had Hattie Harnden, nailed on winner really from quite early on in the race, but that second and third place battle, which was so close all the way through, and then right into that very, very last section, we have Millie Cousins, who made the move, and it was a great move. Millie overtook, 16-year-old Millie Cousins overtook Sophie Thackeray, and I was surprised. I didn't think she'd be able to do it. It was always a possibility, but that was an amazing finish.
Yeah, it truly was, wasn't it? And I think you could just see that the talent in the younger end of the female riding in the UK is just amazing at the moment, isn't it? Is it really interesting? You had the Nikki and Helen years, and then we just suddenly got this massive volume of like a bloom full of people who've just got amazing legs at the moment, and the racing is the best. Yeah. It's just fantastic.
Are you ready for this? So, if you look inside the top five, you know who the old person is? Sophie Thackeray. She's the old person in the top five. Should go a bit further down. How about in the top 10? Eileen Rowe at 30. She's got 10 years on Sophie, who's the next oldest rider. But you've got to go down inside that top 20. I think there are only three, if maybe four people who are over the age of 20. That is phenomenal. And it shows you just how quick. And some of these riders, I mean, Eileen Rowe's battle with Fiona Turnbull, who was fighting now with Katie Scott. There's a great battle between Abby Manley, Amira Meller on a comeback as well. I just thought the whole thing was absolutely immense. And you could see the riders loved it. You could see they loved it, and the pile out of the finish as everybody came over the line. They were discussing the lines they'd taken, and that final set of corners meant you couldn't relax right the way to the line. And I think that's, for me, that's great cross racing.
Yeah, and I think that it's something we often talk about, and we talked about it at Irvine last year. It's something the riders talk about, particularly at Derby, and it's that where do you need to be in front? On the end of the race, the end of the racetrack, where is it you need to make your move in order to be able to defend it? Because some places you can be 2 minutes out and it's not possible to get past. That wasn't the case here. It was quite possible for there to be a genuine sprint for the line, a sprint finish. It was possible there were three or four places in that last 500 metres where you could get past without risking stacking it for both of you. I thought that was a really nice bit of a nice touch actually on the course design. And we saw it. We saw it with Millie Cousins waiting and waiting and waiting, and Sophie just not being able to respond at that point. Whether it was a great bit of strategy or it was like Millie's last gasp attempt, I don't know. But either way, it worked. And you've got that very, very young top 20 there. I think it looks really strong for us in the women's field. In the men's field, I want to be a bit provocative here. I loved the course. I loved the racing. I really enjoyed watching it. But I was wondering, it settled down actually fairly early on. And I was wondering if this had been televised and Matt had been watching, would he be saying to us, oh, we knew what was going to happen from early on. There were no position changes and maybe it wasn't that exciting.
I think you could argue, if you stop that race at half distance, how many positions would have changed? Well, top four or five, not that much. But actually, if you look at the subtlety a little bit further back, every one of those positions changed. They might have ended up at the same place as they started out five half race distance, but they changed six times in every lap on the way through. And I think that's the difference that we saw there over a lot of the continental races, is that I go on endlessly about dull races, processional races, if it's too hard, But I thought the mix was right, where there was lots of little trigger points where people just changed position time and time and time again. Look at Cameron Mason, Toby Barnes, Lewis Askey's charge up through the field from the back of the grid. He moved his way up and through, but then he went backwards and he went forwards. I mean, you look at the two old stages there. You've got Lewis Craven and Nick Craig in 7th and 8th places, respectively, in the race. And the two of them, they could have got even further up, I think, if that race had gone on. And you've got great riders. Sam Smith, who came in 10th place, youngster. That's probably the ride of the season by him. And they were changing places, one or two places, each time on the way around. So, no, I think it was a nice mix. You could have stopped it halfway and the positions would have been similar, but I don't think they'd have been the same. And I mean, that battle between Conroy and Mason, what a race between the two of them. I mean, the Irishman rode his socks off absolutely there.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Matt, actually. Yeah, that certainly that race there between for the third place, was it just, you know, it was a sprint finish for that one. But even at the front, I knew the positions didn't change and it ended up being a minute gap, but Ian Field, he was always an error ahead of Gus, and anything could have happened. So, yeah, it wasn't like anyone looked comfortable and relaxed, although Ian, should we say, he looked in control and looked like he knew what he was doing in that, whereas I think maybe Gus was, he was on the limit. He looked a lot more on the limit as he was riding.
And he had the right tyres on as well.
You know, yeah.
He said he swore after Derby he was never coming to the UK with anything but mud tyres ever again. And at the end of it, he was happy that he'd got everything out. He'd made mistakes like everybody had. And we talk about Ian being, you know, coming round, and in the end it was nearly a minute that separated them. But do you know what? It was tight. It was really, really close. And Ian would have needed one mistake, one slip, one slide. And everybody made mistakes. And it made me think on the day, actually, back to the interview that we had with Katerina Nash on the last show, that it wasn't about not making mistakes. It's about how you dealt with it. And Ian dealt with them like they were nothing. It was just another day at the races. And good to see him that he's back on form, because obviously a much harder round at Derby where we had a lot more of the international riders. This time round, gets himself there, back into the yellow jersey, and he's right up there. And it shows you how tough that race was. Only 14 riders finished on the same lap. That is tough stuff.
And I think there were fewer than that actually in the women's race. So yeah, it was tough stuff indeed. I think that quote from Katerina Nash from the last show, which of course you can go back and download, it's going to get rolled out time and time again. I've used it several times since then, this idea of it's not having the incidents, it's how you respond to them. I think that's some of the wisest words we've had on the Crosscast, certainly more than what you get from the three of us usually. But Katerina, of course, is on that international scene. It'd be lovely if she could come and race in the UK at some point. In fact, she was saying she wanted to do the Three Peaks at some stage. But we on the Crosscast, we aim to cover the four main season-long series. So that's the UK National Trophy, of course, the World Cup, and then the DVV and the Telenet Super Prestige Series, which, of course, kicked off last weekend with some awesome racing at an awesome venue in Heaton. Yeah, this lakeside venue, we saw Corydon Circus, Sailing, Del Carmen, Alvarado take the win ahead of Eco, Creelan, Sana Kant, and Triples Evans, Yara, Catalain. And then in the elite men's race, an action-packed race with Paul Salson's Eliezer Beat taking the win after a really close final lap battle with Telenet Balwa's Lions' Quinton Hermans, with teammate Corne van Kessel in third place. And you know what? That must have been one of the best elite men's races that I've seen on TV for a very long time. What do you think?
It always produces a really close race there. We've had it for the last few seasons where even at the start of the season with Van der Poel, when he has raced there, he's been pushed to the line there. And I do think that course really, it very much like Milnthorpe, it really challenges people across different areas of the sport, running and on the faster sections, but particularly over the weekend where we saw the rain affect it in a slightly different way than we have over the last few years where it's been dry. And of course we got to see that fantastic cable cam again, which I always like.
The cable cam is awesome, and we've remarked on it for a few years, but the whole course, I thought, it's about trigger points for me. There's trigger points everywhere around that course that suit different riders, that there's a point where riders are going to make a mistake. We saw people sliding off. There's one of the turns, one of the 180 degree turns in the sand, where we saw that chain loss, where we saw riders making moves, we saw mistakes. The coming off the sand, up the sandy run up, we saw in the women's race, we saw a ride on the right hand side, I think Backer just trying to ride up there, and yet everybody in that race had to be off there, but how they dealt with it was different, and that was another trigger point. But they continued all the way around the course. It was lots of little features. You don't need one big Koppenberg to make a great race, because what that does is just annihilates a race and it separates it. You want lots of little trigger points, and that is the one thing I think we see time and time and time again, and we're rewarded. It was the most exciting race, and I'm going to say it, I'll put it out there, I thought that the men's race was better than the women's race. But no, I did. I thought it was really, really good. And that's to take nothing away from what was an absolutely stunning women's race. It was really good. It's just the men's race was awesome. Both very, very good. The women's race, it was a really intriguing battle, but it went early. Yeah. It went very, very early. With the men's race, you know, that chase back, that coming back as is a bit on form. How's he dealing with a couple of days racing? And I think that's one of the things we've got to remember. A lot of the guys were going there on 2 days of racing. Some of the people were fresh. And I think that throws that extra bit into the mix that means it's much more exciting to watch.
And what do you think about riders like Annemiek van Vleuten, riding fresh back from winning the World Championships on the road? And I'd say she hasn't been to many of Helen Wyman's cross clinics by the looks of it, but she's got that power. And she looked like she had a great time. She did get 80%, but she looked like she'd had a wonderful time.
Yeah, she was smiling as she got 80%. I think it's one of those things, isn't it? It's great to see the riders come on. And we talk about getting back, you know, oh, let's have Stibar back, let's have Sagan riding cross, why don't we see all the, you know, the riders that we've seen, Tunison, who's doing more and more road. But actually, do you know what, when they do come, they come, they enjoy it, it's good for the spectators. Do we need to take them seriously? No, I think that's doing a disservice to the cross riders. I mean, it was good to see a lineup, and there was clearly a wry smile on her face at the start of this going, what am I doing? And we've all been there. We've all got to the start line and gone, what on earth have I done this for? And that was what sort of, it was almost mirrored in her face, was that, what have I done? Oh, well, I better get on with this then. And then she started racing, and once that pack went off, she got into it a little bit more. But, you know, we know she's got the power. We know she's got the speed. Maybe she does need to go and do a few more cross clinics, and then we might see her right back up there. But women's ride for me, definitely the ride by Celine Del Carmen and Alvarado.
But I think there are some other rides to note. I mean, Sanna Kant is usually has a slower start to the season, and I was expecting her to almost sit back and, you know, not fight, but just I was expecting her to finish fifth or sixth in this race. So I was surprised to see how strong she came late on in the race. And Ava Lechner as well. She's looking better than she's looked for a long time, in my view. She's looking lean. She's looking, no, she's looking fresh. She looks like she's taking it really seriously this season. And coming up with that fourth place, I think she's someone to really keep an eye on for this year, because she looks pretty serious. She's doing a lot of work this year.
Yeah, I thought she put in a really good ride, and she really came good. It was interesting to see it happened at the back end of the race. It wasn't really an early charge. She got better as the race went on, and I think that showed that she is going to be a rider to watch out when we get to the more traditional courses, because let's not forget, there was a lot of dismount, lots of remounts. There are a lot more people, I think, who are traditional cross riders who have got a lot of cross experience who put that to the fore. And Sanna Camp, we know, I mean, you know, she has class to burn. She came out and I thought she rode a very, very smart race. She didn't panic when the riders went off, when you saw them out racing up at the front of the race. And Casterly, Yara Casterly, taking, you know, third place. That was a great ride by her. And I was really impressed by how quickly she got herself up there. Inga van der Heijden going backwards to be 13th place, nothing to be sneezed at. But what I think she suffered with was the lack of experience, whereas she can use the speed on the early races. She couldn't do that this time. She had to dismount, remount. And that made a big difference. Other rider of the day, Anna Flynn. Absolutely flying, 22nd at the end of the race. But there were times through that race where she was sitting just inside the top 15. And I thought she did a really good ride there from what is, again, a very, very young rider. I think Anna's only 17 at the moment. And to see her out there and racing, she put in a really good performance in that. And there's actually some scalps there. She certainly managed to get a lot further than the current Road World Champ did.
Yeah, absolutely. The other riders to sort of is, I was thinking the women race, we had the Van Androys and Lindy, who came over and raced at Derby. She was second there. She actually finished 19th. And I presume it's the younger sister, Shirin, only 17 years old, the youngest rider in that top 10, probably in the top 20, actually, looking at it. She finished in 9th place. So a young rider, keep an eye on Shirin Van Androy. Don't get her confused with Lindy, who was the one racing in Derby. But certainly that looks like it's a name we may start to get very used to in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it bodes well when you look a little bit further down those ranks that some of these continental teams are now looking and thinking, we're going to have a junior women's race coming up. We need some junior women coming through. And there's some support coming through. And there's some very young riders now taking the race starts, getting those points, and looking ahead already for those races when we're going to get those junior women's races in separately.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, looking forward to it. And there were some more official announcements that that's the actual dates that they're going to be for the DVV, actually coming from DVV rather than sort of second-hand routes, which is great to see. Looking forward to them, planning on being there myself. So I think one of the things that we did see in, which made a nice change in the men's race, was the actually the number of people who were leading that early on. It took a while for it to settle down. People, even people like Joris Nieuwenhuis from Sunweb, one, a rider who hasn't got one of the familiar jerseys on that normally are leading the race. And we, I stopped writing them down, actually, you know, but I think we had Yanni Vermeersch, Dan Serter, Quinton Hermans, and you know, lots of different people who were leading that. I never saw Tom Pidcock take the lead, but he was way up there and he put a few surges in, but they were quickly responded to with his nice new Red Bull helmet.
Yeah, definitely. He was. I thought he was looking okay. Looking a little bit tired. I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I think he's only been on the bike 5 or 6 times since the World Championships. And that's clearly showing in the form when you go to a weekend. You've got 2 races on a weekend. And it's, again, that takes its effect on riders. I thought it's going to the show how he responds. I mean, that Red Bull helmet, Red Bull being involved in the sport, is absolutely amazing. It's great. Their coverage of the mountain bike is absolutely immense. And I think now that they're getting involved, we're seeing more and more riders. You put it on Pidcock. You know he's going to be out there. He's going to be up there and racing. I think everybody else has stepped up. The lack of Matthew Van Der Poel, the lack of Wout Van Aert, everybody else has thought, right, now's my chance. Let's go for it. Quinton Hermans, what a season he's having. Conor Van Kessel, he's resurging. I'm not quite sure where he went off for a couple of years, but we've got the old, you know, Conor Van Kessel come back. Lars van der Haar comes in 4th place. Lars, who is getting called the old statesman by some of the commentators. You know, this kid's under, you know, he's still under 30, and yet he's up there at 4th place. And I think really interesting to see how Pidcock was right in the mix, but he didn't give up. Got Ben Turner only just behind him. I think Turner was 16th, I think, by the end of the race there. And, you know, he beat Bram Merlier, who, you know, was second over on the podium when they came to the National Trophy. He was 24th in the race, and it shows you just how far, how tough it is. But you've seen a lot more riders, people like Cameron Mason, of course, teammate on the Trinity Racing team out there. And we saw Callum McLeod, I think, was racing. And, of course, a certain Mr. Finn Mansfield was out there as racing as well. How did Finn get on?
Yeah, great, actually. He had a fabulous time, really enjoyed it. Finished 44th, which I think is nothing to be ashamed of. That's a brilliant race. You know, I got some inside information from him on the course, and he was saying actually some of the parts of the course, what you can't see on the TV, is just how many rocks there are embedded in that, particularly in the descents. They're just rammed full of these like fist-size rocks, so it isn't a soft landing if you stack it on any of those. And he was actually saying in the junior race, Thibaut Nies, who came and won it, he said the only thing that Thibaut did that was different to anyone else was there was, you know, that long, wide climb. He rode it every lap and hardly anyone else could ride it. And basically he was at the same pace as everyone else everywhere else, but he made his gap there and just extended it every lap by riding that long climb. We saw a lot of riders attempting it. I think Cam Mason made it most times. So, yeah, in the elite race. But, yeah, that was where the race was won.
Yeah, Cam Mason rode it every time but one.
That was the one that he was...
Stuff, yeah, was the one on telly, for sure. But you've got to be looking at their race sponsors. They had their team launch down at the Red Bull HQ down in London. And they've got to be very pleased. Loads of coverage from them. And we know Cameron Mason and Tom Pickup, all friends of the show, of course. Good on social media is Mr. Mason. He is, I think Bruce said, the most media-savvy rider of his generation already.
Yeah, definitely. He knows how to market himself. And I think the whole team there really are onto a winner. They've got a good bunch of riders and they've got an interesting story and they're out there and already racing. And they've got a lovely designed kit, I must say. And they're straight out there on the content and people are already engaging with it. So, you know, they're doing well. But, you know, you've got to remember there's other teams in the UK, smaller ones, who are doing similar stuff. And they are still doing it with a lot less backing and a lot less money. And, you know, it shouldn't be just in people's minds that you have to have lots of money to do these things. It can be done on your little phone and you can get stuff and results and pictures out on the social media to reward stuff to your sponsors. Perfectly possible.
They've got some really interesting signings down there with Abby May Parkinson rejoining the battle, somebody who I remember racing and taking national titles.
We've got an opportunity to have a chat to several from the Trinity Racing team. Let's dive into the pits when Matt caught up with Trinity Racing.
Okay, so we're down in the pits and we're going to welcome two of our pretty regular crosscasters, two people who are now on a shiny new team that have only got just the slightest bit of mud on the bikes after a weekend's racing, Tom Pidcock and Cameron Mason.
Hi, Ian.
I'm good. So we've got Cam and Tom. Who's the oldest out of the two of you?
I'm the oldest. I think there's a year between, isn't there? Yeah, just a year.
Just the 1 year between you. So you've basically grown up racing against each other one way or another.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, definitely in cross, but we haven't overlapped too much, actually. I remember seeing you at Interregionals a few times, mountain bike. But no, yeah, it's funny how some riders you end up racing your, like, when you're younger, and some riders you don't really see as much. So
what brought you together for Trinity Racing, which is the new team? Because last year, Tom, it was TP Racing, wasn't it?
Yeah, last year TP Racing, and now Trinity Racing gives a bit, well, I mean, it's going to extend into the road, so it's more of a team and not just, not solely based around me.
And how does the ego take that? Are you managing to cope with the fact there's a few other people to look after?
Fine. I mean, I guess, well, I think it Andrew's been saying and that it is sort of a tool for me to use, but I guess it's TP Racing is, well, Pumping Got Racing, it's not just about me, you know, teams have got other riders need to get results and everything. So yeah, I think in hindsight, probably shouldn't have been called TP Racing in the first place.
But things change and move on. And you mentioned Andy there, Andy McQuaid. I think I last worked with Andy on the Tour of Ireland back when both of you two were probably not even riding a bike. Explain a little about Andy. What's his role in the team?
Andrew's the principal, isn't he? He runs the team, yeah. So, yeah, he owns, runs Trinity Sports Management. And now, yeah, without Wiggins, there needed to be a replacement. And so the cross team is also now... I say a road team, but I'm going to be doing mountain bike races and stuff, so it's extended, and yeah, needed a place for British riders to develop.
And it's not just you guys on the team, is there? We've also got Abby Mae Parkinson, who's was a handy cross rider in a day, and I remember her taking national titles. Have either of you two ridden with Abby or against Abby in the past?
No, well, not against, but I think since she's a couple of years older, like even like interregionals and stuff, I never really raced with her.
So no dodgy Chris Young sessions down at Marley or anything daft like that?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, she was like the generation above Trinity that got Abby on the team, and I think she wanted to come back and have a go across. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how she goes this winter. She's there. Was a bit timid at the photo shoot. She didn't want to do any whips or anything with me and Cam, but we'll get some out of
it. So we're expecting at least, you know, a little bit of sideways action over the top of the next bridge that we actually see her coming up to.
Yeah, and boom, me and Cam have already got it thought. Photographer there.
Excellent. So when Abby hears this, when she's going to boom, you can really lay some pressure on that. She's really got to style it up over the top.
Yeah. Well, we've already promised a practice lap with her as well. So we're going to take her around the course at Boom and show her the lines and stuff. So we'll help her out with that bit.
And how does that kind of work? Because at the moment we've got Tom, who is, I think you said, six rides, was it, between the World Championships and racing this last weekend? Is it six times on the bike,
yeah,
on the cross bike?
I think, yeah, maybe five rides, maybe five runs as well. I went running while I was on holiday. And now I've got shin splints, so I can't run anymore.
It's got to be bad for you, this running. Like, there's the reason people invented bikes, for sure. Cam, tell me you're a better runner than Tom. You haven't got shin splints, have you?
Well, I'm saying I'm a better runner than Tom. Well, we went out this morning for, like, 4K. We were both just a bit on the limit because we had Eliud Kipchoge's marathon time in our head, and we were just like, oh, flip, this is fast. He's already run a mile, and we've only run 400 metres. It's like the running's important, isn't it? And Sunday's race kind of showed that in Heaton. It was, yeah, a bit of a slog in some bits. So,
there was just a couple of sections that, maybe Cam, you were riding and Tom, you were running. Do you share that information when you're out on that practice lap? Is that something you're going to be sharing with Abby as well, I guess?
Yeah, like when I got back to the camper, I was telling Tom about that line that I was riding. It's good to know, like, just have someone else's opinion. Like, when it comes to the race, like, all the lines can be so different. But just having someone else give their opinion, like we were sharing information about, like, where the big hits were and stuff, but it's just good to have them in your head.
It was actually, like, I've only followed cross for like the last 3-4 years, but I don't remember that race ever being muddy like this. So maybe they didn't know it was all rocky and that underneath. And yeah, but I mean, you're going through sloppy mud that was like a few inches deep, and you're just hitting massive rock in there, and yeah, I punctured, I think maybe probably broke a rim as well.
Broker room as well, so it's pretty serious stuff out there. And you've got some really good sponsors on board, a real mix, but some pretty bling bikes.
Yeah, they're pretty mint. They've been standing out in all the photos and stuff, so we can't really blame anything on the bikes, can we? So it's all about us, especially with all the mechanics keeping everything tip top. So everything's sweet for us, and just leaves us to do the hard work and just get stuck in.
How's it working through the winter then? Are you stopping in the same house, in an apartment? Have you rented someone with a swimming pool?
In the breakaway, yeah. Kurt's place,
And then in terms of training areas, what have you got around you? Have you got...
Well, in Belgium, there's a lot more places you can go ride your cross bike. Well, I mean, like, proper, like, sand. I mean, there's not really much sand in the UK, is there? So, yeah, but it's all, like, yeah, half an hour drive, 45-minute ride. There's nothing like... I mean, there's a wood near us, but it's not really... I mean, Cam went there the other day, but there's not that much there. And, yeah, like, Flanders, like, the climbs and that are not too far from here, so if you go a long ride, you go over there, up to the Mer, Gerritsbergen and that.
Yeah. So Tom took me around Hofstadter last week in the sand, which is pretty cool. It's just like a little like floating lake with sand around it. So we got some practice in before Sunday, which we didn't really even need because it wasn't that sandy. All the sand was just hard packed. But
Tom, what tip would you give to Cam when it comes to riding in the sand to get it right and not end up laid with an earful of sand?
I mean, I'm not an expert in the sand, but you fell off too. Well, yeah, everyone falls off in the sand. I mean, you got to, it's tricky, isn't it? But you got to relax in the sand, like, and keep your body weight between your handlebars. That's the most important thing.
So who's better in sand, Tom or Cam?
Tom's had a bit more experience, I think, just having done more races. So, like, that experience pays off, I think.
Okay, so it's one up in the...
Cam saying that I'm better in a roundabout way, so I don't actually have to admit it.
Yeah, that's one for Tom. So, okay, deep, thick mud. We saw some really glutinous, horrible stuff. Are you expecting that the mud skills are going to come out the weekend?
Yeah, we were chatting about it today, about how it probably will be muddy, but it's like on that bank. It's really steep. You can't really see it on camera, but and the way the conditions were last year, like, no one even thought about it because it was so dry. So it'll be interesting to see how those kind of so there's like plastic carpet underneath the flat stuff, and once it gets down to that, it's like, cause I think it's like a music venue as well, so
Tomorrowland.
Yeah. So it's quite, yeah, it'd be quite a funny one. It's not your classic Belgian field. It's like a kind of like park, isn't it? So
yeah, we'll wait and see if you two end up there through the summer as well.
Maybe.
At the breakaway, in between races, when you're not talking about racing bikes and you're not talking about what you're going to do and the photographers and the shots you're going to set up, how do you kill the time? You know, most people have a job, most people go to work, like, you could train. Then after that, please don't tell me you just stare into each other's eyes across a candlelit table or anything like that.
Not quite that. We made pizzas tonight, actually, so that was our evening activity. We made pizzas.
Well, we didn't.
Yeah, Tom's girlfriend made pizzas, and then we rolled them out. We just ate them and rolled them out. Tom likes his Fortnite, and I like video editing, so we just sit on the sofa and just do that all the time, which is not as good.
Well, Fortnite is down at the moment because season 2 or whatever is coming out, so you can't actually play it.
No one actually cares about that as much as you, Tom, though.
No, they do. In like 300,000 tweets in Belgium or something. Trending.
Yeah, clearly Tommy's embracing the Fortnite culture in Belgium, maybe a little bit more than you there, Cam. Cam spent maybe a little bit too much time on his own, you know, up in a flat with a video of himself. It's always worrying. So other questions I've been told to ask. Tom, when are you going to get a top knot? When's that coming?
I had one in yesterday, actually, on the way back from the race. Yeah, but don't think I'll be... Well, actually, I used to have one as well when I had long hair last year, and... But yeah, I think I'm going to get a haircut.
You mean it's not going to be the new team look?
No, I don't think so. Just come can just pull that off. It's not
a team issue, I don't think. It's just my thing.
I think Andrew might struggle with it, to be fair.
Yeah, I'll be jealous for any of that because he ain't got any hair.
You've got a whole stack of races coming up. Who doesn't want to go out training? Who's the one that you got to drag out of bed in the morning?
We haven't had much opportunity to see that yet, although... I haven't really found my motivation yet, to be honest, after the road season, so probably me at the moment.
Yeah, whereas I'm just, like, buzzed about everything at the moment, because new bikes, new kit, everything, so that's pretty motivating, whereas Tom's like, same old.
So you're like a bouncy puppy at the moment, Cam, and Tom's like, oh, really? What are you going to need to get the motivation going? Is it going to be a podium that you're looking for? Does that switch? Is that going to switch it on?
If I keep getting my head kicked in, I'm going to get fed up at that, aren't I? So then I'm
going to be motivated. Is that how it feels at the moment?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a bad first weekend, but it was certainly a lot better than last year. So, yeah, I,
top class, but it's not really. So yeah, I'm just gonna, it just, it'll take a week or two and get to find my proper motivation. But yeah, still gonna start training this week. And
Cam,
yeah, like the gridding's kind of the bane of like a rider at my level. Just like you're always in between, right at the top, and then the kind of the back runners, and yeah, you've just got to really attack those first few laps to make the difference. But like my first weekend went really well. Like after the race on Saturday, I was a bit like, oh, it's a bit like, nah, it's not the best, but it's my second best ever elite result. So like, yeah, it's sweet. So I can't really complain. And yeah, hopefully I'll be back over for a national trophy or two to grab some more points, hopefully. And yeah, just keep chipping away at it.
Must have been a long way from where you were to Tom up at the front with his Red Bull helmet on.
Yeah, well, I see him every so often as the course like overlaps, and we don't say hello, but we share each other's like suffering. So that's fine.
Cam, what's your goal for the season so far, do you reckon?
Yeah, well, there's a few numbers in my head, but yeah, the big goal is kind of national champs and world champs. Those kind of, that part of the year. So right now, it's just making sure that I keep learning, keep progressing, get some points, and then when things start ramping up around Christmas, just make sure that we stay fit and healthy, and yeah, should be good to come January.
Tom, you know, you've got the jersey, you've got the stripes, you've been out there, you've kind of seen it all, done it all, got bored with it all, ended up stuck on Fortnite.
Yeah, it's the same for me. I mean, the World Champs is I'm going to get a podium at World Champs in the Elite. That's the goal. Yeah, I want to try to do well overall in the Super Prestige, mainly because there's a lot of prize money. So yeah, it's always the end part of the season where I always get my form but yeah, that's the main goal. And
we know what you're aiming for. We know where you're going. Anything else on the horizon?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the summer, plans to do Cape Epic, some gravel races, and I want to do a mega avalanche race because they look pretty sick. So, but yeah, we'll see about that last one.
Are you both planning on this, or is this just a Tom special?
A lot of this is around Tom, but I've got a few of my own plans for kind of gravelly events and some good fun stuff like that. I've had a few people message me about GB Duro, but I think that might be above my kind of endurance level a bit at the moment. But nah, just a bit like enjoying the bike riding hopefully next summer.
Talking of going into the summer, there's talk of the road team. I'm presuming there's going to be more than just the two of you and Abby.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's going to be four squad, probably about 10 riders on the road. Yeah, that's probably all I can say for now, but probably quite a young team, and yeah.
And you can't say anymore because you'll be in trouble with the boss.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely going to be one.
The names, you can come and break into the service course because all the wash bags are out today.
So is that how you guys get to know? You actually, it's like in the service course, you actually see people's wash bags turn up, then you get to know that way, or do you get some notice in advance?
No, I knew the team anyway, but I knew fancy wash bags arrived today. So,
and is that when it all starts to get real? You know, it hits the fan, and yeah, you start thinking, This is actually coming and it's on its way. It's not the first race, it's actually when you go to service course and you start seeing all this stuff building up.
Yeah, well, I mean, like when I went to Wigan the first year, I got a wash bag with a name on it. That was one of the coolest things.
Well, yeah, that's one of the coolest things for me just then. Today I got my wash bag that says Mason on it, that's my day made.
Sometimes it's those little things that can make the difference. Other than the wash bags, anything else that sort of that makes you go, yeah, we're on it now, it's real?
Well, yeah, I had a bit of a moment on Saturday at the race when I had a shower after practice just in the camper van, and it doesn't seem like much, but I was well stoked on it because I was like, I just had a shower on race day after practice, and so it was cool. Yeah, that, like, having the camper is absolutely sweet. It's good fun.
And what's the camper like? Pimped out, white sofas, big TV screens, Fortnite set up ready for Tom?
Well, we were doing a little planning session when we were waiting for Saturday's race, and we were thinking about where we could put the TV screen. But
and predictions for Boom then, because this show's going to come out just before it.
Well, top five would be nice, but I reckon I'll be top ten at Boom. Yeah.
Okay, and Kem?
I want to not fall off in the sand this year. and top 30 was a great superstition. That's kind of be a good one to pick off this year.
Great to have you come down to the pits. Cam and Tom?
Yeah, thank you very much. Cheers.
That was great to hear from the Trinity Racing team. Let's see if their legs match their marketing.
Time will tell. But let's look forward. We'll find out one day, and let's look forward to the upcoming races in the Lasteronde. In the Lasteronde, we always look forward to what we've got to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. And coming up next, we have two races in the Super Prestige series. So we have the first of these is in Bome. Open parkland, it's got climbs and it's got descents and really open. You can see a lot what's going on, and there's that little cobble climb. So lots of bits and pieces in Bome. And then there's that little sequence which goes, I can't remember what the order is, but it kind of go, you get the flyover and then the sand and then up the steps and then back on yourself and then you come back over the barriers of whatever height they are. Bome, what are you looking forward to there?
I'm looking forward to see the resumption of battle in the men's. I'm looking forward to an exciting men's race, actually. And I want to see how the riders deal with this change in course, because it is a lot shorter. I mean, you know, we've seen fast courses, we've seen the classic course, now we go to Bome, and it's almost a bit like a GB course, isn't it, in some ways. It's quite short and it's quite punchy. Come on, Bruce, you must have raced there.
I've never raced there, but does anyone know what links dance music to Super Prestige Cyclocross at Bome?
Oh, it's just going to be a bad pun.
No, it's not. It's not. It's an interesting fact. The Bome course is where they held and have held Tomorrowland since 2005, which is one of the biggest dance music festivals in Europe. There you go. There's a fact for you there.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad that you explained what Tomorrowland was. Have you been to Tomorrowland?
No, unfortunately, I've not. It's one of the festivals I wanted to go to. Sadly, no. But what it has is it has that natural amphitheatre feel to it. And I know that last year, quite a few people remarked on how great it was to race there, actually. So it'll be really interesting to see what that looks like. And also, this time last year, it was dry. We've had heavy precipitation on the continent now for a while. The ground is getting wet. The courses we previously had is dry. And again, it looks like it could be a wet weekend. So it could be all a very different thing because there's quite a few banks there.
Yeah, and it can be, if it is dry, and I'm not expecting it to be, then it can be very, very fast. If you remember last year, one of the iconic shots of Matthew van der Poel for the whole season was him pulling a big cross up off of the flyover, I think, in his last lap at Bome. And I just can't see that that's going to happen if the weather there has been anything like the weather everywhere else in Europe over the past week or so. So I think it's going to be quite a different race to what we've seen over the last few years.
Definitely, definitely. I think the contrast between that and the races we've had this season, it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be interesting to see which riders come through, though, because I think the riders who we've seen good this last weekend are going to continue that form. But I would put money on Sana Kant coming through. I think she's going to want to win soon. I don't think she can last much longer before she needs that reassurance that she can be back up on that top step. I think she's the rider I would be putting my money on, and I think a really good battle between her and Alvarado. That should be interesting to watch at Bome. Obviously, bearing in mind, different riders target different series, so that will make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. The other race which will be coming up in the next couple of weeks is at Hervera, the one I can never have any confidence in pronouncing. Total contrast to Bome. It's one which is in the trees, a lot of mud, and I always, whenever I think of Hervera, I always think back to, I think it was 2016. There's a long climb there when there was Julien Verschuren chasing Sana Kant up that climb. And it was one of those last lap events where it was literally everyone gets out of their chair and we're all shouting at the telly moment. It was absolutely amazing. It is on YouTube. I'm not going to tell you what the result is. I don't want to spoil it for you. But absolutely amazing ride. And I think that's going to be very similar to what it was in 2016. And it's got the climb on it at Hervero in many places. It's right. They've like designed the angle of it perfectly. So you can just about ride it if you can keep traction, or you can run it. And one of them might be quicker for 10 metres and then it'll be a bit slower for 10 metres. And it's that choice of running and riding. Where do you dismount? Where do you remount? Are you actually capable of doing it? How much do you protect the bike? Do you shoulder it? Do you push it? Do you suitcase carry it? So much intrigue. And for someone who knows the technicality of cross, then it's one where there's so much to look for.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough drag, isn't it? Up there, we see many, many battles, whether it's Class 1 Tour now in 2011 with the Kevin Powells, or even down to Sven, I believe, in 2007. Sven was the only rider who could ride up that climb. And I remember watching him with awe as he sort of rode up there with no PSI in his tubs, in a great masterclass of Svenness, really. And he rode up there and just stormed to victory. So it does, it's one of those decisive ones. It's got that swooping bottom corner as well, which some riders will carry with a lot of speed and maybe a little bit too much speed, and we've seen people wipe out into the big inflatable barriers there as well. So it's always a challenging course.
I think it could be completely different to Boehm. I think after these three races we're gonna have a much better idea of who's going to be lining themselves up for the rest of the season. At the moment it's still so open amongst both of the categories, although I think there are standout riders. I would say standout riders, Eliezer Bit and Salins or Carmen Alvarado for me at the moment. I think in 2 weeks' time, we might be saying something else.
We might be, but they are the riders of the season so far, and both youngsters coming up and through, which I think is brilliant stuff. But it is going to set us up really well for when we're going on to the World Cup, because that's when we see everybody coming out to play, and they all try and bring out the A game as well.
It's around that lake, and it's in some ways it's almost like urban cross. It's that city centre lake. It's last year, it had the thing that we remembered last year, probably for the wrong reasons, is it had what I think was just the daft AB line, where there was a ramp or a curb that you could bunny hop, and it was. I hope that's not in again this year. But overall, as a race, I think it was an interesting one to watch last year because it was so different. It was in that new venue, and they've gone back and looking at the course map, it looks like it's going to be very, very similar.
Looks almost identical. I was sort of overlaying one on the other on the computer thinking, I wonder whether we're actually going to see the difference on the ground, and this is actually not what we're going to get, because you've got to remember, you've got one of the most progressive race organisers on the planet there, Christian Rocha, absolutely spot on in his EKZ series. He does some really innovative courses, and I think we're probably going to see just those little tweaks, like we talked about at the National Trophy with Dave Haygarth. Those little tweaks, those little changes can totally alter the way that the racing is, and it's certainly going to change how it feels to ride it, for sure.
I don't think any of us have actually been, probably not in the swimming pool or raced on the race. But someone who has raced there before is Helen Wyman. We're going to pounce on Helen Wyman and see if we can get our 100 seconds all about Bern.
So welcome to the Helen's 100 seconds on the World Cup at Bern. I believe you've been doing some jet setting backwards and forwards at the moment between somewhere sunny and somewhere maybe a little bit muddy.
Yeah, we went to Belgium this weekend just so that we could be at some of the team races. And we went to Kruijbeke on Saturday, just flew up Friday, flew back Sunday. Gieten's quite a long way to drive to, so it was much more convenient just to the only team race was that on the Saturday anyway. So, but we had riders on both races and they did great. And Anna jumped the barriers, which was amazing. I went to try and get a video of it and I totally missed it. I took a photo as she went over and a photo when she finished going over.
But
I didn't have time to take another one, so I had to go to the finish then.
Mega, I love it. Looking forward, we've got Bern, we've got World Cup, we've got Switzerland, we've got cowbells, we've got alpine pastures. Helen, are you ready?
Ready.
Your time starts now.
So Bern World Cup is a new one that we had on the calendar for the first time last year. And it's a really, really fun race if you're into fun, fast, kind of techie kind of things. And there's a really long straight that goes right into a gravel section. And last year I went from front row to about last row on that one section and then spent the next four laps trying to move up. So there's really hard places, difficult places to find places to overtake. And so for me, I was trying to use the straights, which there aren't very many of. There's lots of these off-camber banks where you drop down and then ride up, and I was able to ride them, but unfortunately the groups that I found myself in, because I had flicked myself so badly at the start, weren't able to do that. And there was one incident where one girl actually put me in the barriers and cut my hand, and at that point I think I might have sworn at her in Italian. She was Italian. And I just pulled the douchiest move on her in the next corner, and I never saw her again. But it is a really fun course because there's lots of things to jump. There's some pavement things you have to jump over, and then there's a gravel pit you jump into and jump out of, and things like that. So to watch, I think it's a really, really exciting race. We've been told that there might be some rain this week, but I really don't think it's going to affect the course. And as for location, it's smack bang in the middle of a burn next to a big shopping centre. So while it's pretty in the park, there aren't any mountains and there aren't any cows or cowbells. But other than that, I think it's going to be down to probably some of the Dutch riders taking the win. Although I would love to see Magali Rochette win again in Europe. And I know.
Time's up. I love this story about going around the corner. I won't ask what happened in the race after that when you met her again.
Oh, she was so annoying. Well, no, I don't even remember her name. She was that terrible. That's how far back I was.
Brilliant. Listen, I know you're really busy. Thank you for recording for the Crosscast. That's Helen's 100 on Burton. So Stop Press managed to grab a quick 5 minutes with the man who is on the ground out there for the World Cup at Burn. Christian, how are you?
Oh, I'm quite fine, quite busy actually. Today we started with the track building, but everything went good, it's going good, but it's like always quite a lot of work.
And how is the track looking? Is it going to be different to last year?
So our plan or our concept this season or this year is not to change a lot because last year was quite a good success. We had quite good feedbacks from different types like riders, federation, like media, spectators. So we said we should not change too much. We just would like to do a lot of little points, more professional, more perfect, I would like to say, to do it even a little bit better than last year. But especially what always is on interest is the track, and the track will stay more or less for 98% the same.
It's going to be 98% the same. So is it just changing corners to make them faster or slower, or is it a slight feel you're looking for?
No, I mean, last year or the last 2 years, the year before when it was an AKZ Cross 2 race, we always had very sunny conditions and dry conditions. And yeah, some feedbacks were it's too fast, it's like a road race. But we know, I mean, cyclocross is made also a lot of times by the weather. And if it will be rainy or if it will be a little bit wet, our course will change completely. And I think we do not have to change corners or do it more difficult. We just would like to see what the weather will do. And even if it would be like last year, sunny and dry, we saw quite some good races. So we are not going to change a lot.
Not going to change too much. And what is the condition looking like? Is it good grass? Is it being worn? Is it dry? Is it dusty?
No, actually, we had in the last few weeks, we had, I would not say a lot of rain, but for autumn in Switzerland, more rain than in the last 2-3 years. So that means it's not dry, actually. Today it was a rainy day. The next 2-3 days should be good, but actually weather forecast for the weekend, it's not so sure, but we expect that there will be some rain. It will not be that dry like the last 2 years.
And when do you need the course ready? When is your first rider going to be on there?
The first start will be on Saturday morning, 9:15. We start with the youth categories of AKZ Cross Tour, under 13, under 15, under 17, followed by an amateur master race, and then on 12:15 we start for our big gravel ride and race, and Saturday final point is our kids cross for the kids from 3 to 14 years before we head over to Sunday, the real World Cup day.
Excellent. And then Sunday, big World Cup day, and the course has already been used, so that's going to change how it feels. And is it part of the plan to have both days together, to always have this big party atmosphere that's going to inspire people?
For us, it's like a must that we do these 2 days, and that we do not like a typical European World Cup. That means only World Cup Sunday and nothing around that, because that's the concept of AKZ Cross Tour, to involve everyone, hobby riders without any license, to involve kids, families. And that was always sure, if we will do a World Cup, we will do it in our way, in our concept. And for sure, Saturday, the first day, to be honest, gives us a lot of work. Maybe even more than Sunday, because Sunday is quite easy. It's always the same track. It's the whole day. It's not a lot to change. It's just to see how things happen during the race. But Saturday, with all these different events, this is quite complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to be absolutely pulled out. Well, thank you so much for taking a quick 5 minutes out of your day, Christian. We wish you the best of luck here at the Crosscast, and we can't all wait to watch it on the TV. Have a good time and enjoy the weekend at some point.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I'm going to just have to issue a correction there, a factual statement for the record. I have actually been in the swimming pool. I have, in fact, been to the Marzilibad, which is the swimming baths in Bern, and I have been to the very famous local ice cream shop and sampled some really good ice cream as well. So I've been to Bern, I've been to the swimming pool, but I haven't raced there.
I'd rather the image of you racing there than you in the pool anytime, Bruce, believe me. On to a much better subject. Whilst I was chatting with Helen led us into some news that we are allowed to give out. And Bern, being in the World Cup, is going to have a brand new commentator. And in fact, it's going to have two brand new commentators and a brand new channel, because it is going to be Red Bull are broadcasting the World Cups with Rob Hatch and Helen Wyman on the mic. So it's going to be really interesting to be able to watch that. So no longer will you have to be based in Indonesia or Iceland or wherever to get the coverage coming out live. Red Bull are going to be doing the business, and that is going to launch, and all the details will be available very, very shortly. But thanks, Helen, for giving us that little bit of an insight on the way through.
I'm dead excited. If they can do half as good a job as they do for the mountain biking, it's going to be just brilliant. And we've wondered, and we've talked about off the mic many times, about how there's been this growing interest from the brand Red Bull in cyclocross, and so they were hopefully looking at it, because their production is always excellent. They don't do things by halves, and although it's just over the border, you know, they do have a geographical base in that area. Bruce, it's across the pond, isn't it?
Yeah, it's across the pond from one of our clients in Austria, they've got massive resource, and they've got connection, and they have credibility in things that aren't just cycling, which actually I hope therefore broadcasts the appeal of this fantastic sport, in which we love, further afield than just our drop barred community.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be good. I'm looking forward to it and seeing what they're going to do. The standings themselves in the World Cup, we've seen Easebeat have 2 wins, and we've had Ertz having 2 second places. Jennifer Meesch is 3rd in the World Cup at the moment with his 2 fourth places. I don't know whether that's likely to change. I wouldn't want to put money on anybody else, but I think it's a very different type of course. I mean, for the women's race, we've got Nash and Magli Rochette and Hongsinger in the top three. I'd be very surprised if we have the same top three when we come out of Bern. What do you two think? Are we going to see a different people up at the front this time?
Totally different people. I think we're going to see. He's a bit up there, for sure. I think he's likely to continue his form onwards. However, it is a totally different punchy little course, and I wouldn't put money against seeing some of the riders who are maybe just coming into form, getting that form coming good now, actually coming good there. And I would watch out for riders who just started on the weekend we just had, coming through, and I wouldn't put it past Pidcock not to get onto a podium there, that's for sure, because it is a short, punchy, snappy, quick one. It's not long power efforts out and around that course. In the women's racing, I think it'll depend on what that weather does, because if we see a mud bath again, it could well be that we're going to see one of the earlier riders continuing that form onwards. But would you want to bet against Alvarado at the moment, or Worst, who's having a pretty good start to the season? Is she going to come good at the right time? What do you reckon, Bruce?
I don't know. As you say, it's difficult to know where we're going to be in terms of weather conditions, and if the course does prove to be the same and it does have a different, if it's a muddy one and it becomes very slip and slide, it could be really unpredictable as well, because we've got a really close-knit, that front group of five or six women who are really close in ability, but actually could be one of those ones where we just see slips and slides deciding the race.
Yeah, I think so. I can't, in the women's race, I think Alvarado is the favourite for me. As I was saying earlier, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Ava Lechner develops over the season. I don't think this is her course, but I'm going to be really interested to see if she can pull anything out at this course. That's going to be a sign that she's on immense form at the moment. But in the men, I'm with you, Matt. I actually think Pidcock could win it. I think this could be the first time we see Pidcock finish ahead of Easerbeat this year. It's his type of course. He's got that Red Bull, that Red Bull wave. If it is, this is the first time it's on Red Bull TV, there's going to be some expectation there, some confidence there. I think it could be Pidcock's day.
Certainly on a course that's that tight and twisty, his ability on those little technical features, as we know, the very end of last season where he battled with Van der Poel at one of the final rounds of the series, it was very technical, short little bits, sections where he's going to be hopping around, and we know he's great on and off the bike, so it certainly could prove to be an interesting one. And will we see a battle between him and Ezebit, where he's, they've been long-term sort of sparring partners, and is it just going to be, it's going to be interesting.
They absolutely are enemies. They're proper sporting enemies. It's great. There is a very infamous Yorkshire dinner where we had a very frank and open interview with Tom Pidcock, and Tom Pidcock was asked the question by one of the crowd, not by me, I hasten to add, if you could go out with anybody, who's any rider's girlfriend, who would it be? And instantly, Isabit's girlfriend.
Ex-girlfriend.
Is it just whoever Isabit's girlfriend is at any one time?
Tell me, were you sledging Isabit with his tweets, and it's there, that rivalry is there, and it's going to be good for both of them, because it is going to drive them both on. But that edge, I think, could come out. And if we see it, that's going to make for some great racing at Bern.
Yeah. Another question for you, Matt. Anna Kay, let's assume that she takes the start line in Bern. How do you think she's going to go on a course like this?
It should suit her. Her cornering ability, because of her size, because basically, I think when she stood up, I think she comes up probably up to Bruce's saddle height, is the top of Anna Kay's head. She is that short, but her centre of gravity is super low. She can corner. Watching her on the continent, but watching her at Cyclo Park, cornering and practising those corners. If there was a course designed for her, this is it. It is Corner City. It really is going to be interesting. I'm hoping for a podium for Anna. I would love it to be top step. I don't think it's there yet, but she has been so consistent, and the advice that she's getting, she's clearly suited. And in fact, she's eschewing racing in the UK to pursue that continental dream at the moment, and good on her, because it seems to be paying off in spades.
hasn't her form just been storming so far this season as well? I mean, she's technically gifted. She accelerates like a proven rider from many years of experience. And it'll be really interesting to see if one race and one of the big ones, she can really link it all together in that race winning performance. I don't know. It's a really interesting one.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the riders make it down to the World Cup after with that long drive into the mountains. Now, some of us are going to be driving a long way to go up to the next round of the National Trophy. Obviously, that's those people like myself who live in the middle of England. Those people in Scotland, I'm looking forward to going to your homeland again because we had such a great time last year. It's such a beautiful place in Irvine. It's that tropical weather last year. I think there are people swimming in the sea. It was absolutely stunning. I'm hoping that you're going to be able to arrange that again this time.
I'm going to be jumping in the sea regardless, just because it's going to feel like a holiday because you've driven that far. No, I mean, like, we're relatively lucky, as you say, Neil, that actually being from, you know, relatively near the middle, we've not got that far to go. I feel for those from Gravesend and the other ends of the country, but why not? Let's go up there. It's a great course and I'm looking forward to it. I didn't race it last year, unfortunately, so.
You missed out, Bruce. There was, you should listen to the crosscast from that show.
I'll relearn it. I'm hoping that on this crosscast, I'm going to learn about what course we're going to see.
But cast our minds back to last year. If you know, we were expecting something, well, we had something quite different. There was still really good fun, actually. But I mean, the weather was tropical last year. It was shorts and T-shirts weather, which was a surprise to everyone, Scots included. But what we saw in the racing was it was almost like a relief. I think it was round two last year, Irvine. And it was almost like a relief for the Neon Velo guys because they had a 1-2. As I remember rightly, we had Story racing just as a train at the front of the women's race. Of course, none of those riders ride for Story racing anymore, so we can't have that again. So it was almost like settled down at the front of the races there. There were some really exciting things happening a little bit further back amongst riders who were burying themselves and trying to stay near the front and not quite making it to the finish. But this time, if the weather's like last time, it's going to be a fairly... I think we could end up with a similar type of racing, but I think it's unlikely we're going to get such, you know, hot, sunny weather in 2 years on the same date in Irvine. And so I think it could be like a new course. It's something we're not going to have been used to.
Definitely. You've got to remember, last season we had a dry start to the season. Race after race after race, Firetread City would have suited me down to the ground. Now we have had muds, we've had jet washes, we've seen riders at trophies already. We've had Westmoreland, which was a mud fest. Now, we're going up to an organiser that's now on their second year. So all those lessons from year one, incorporate that into year two, set that in that natural bowl in that amphitheatre with your banks at either end, add into the fact that we're not going to oversell the sand this time round, so it's suddenly going to become a slightly different bit of a beastie out there. I think in terms of weather, it's going to be wetter. There's already been more rain, there's already going to be more soaking in, but it's based on the coast, so it does drain. But what's the odds at the moment? The forecast, the long-term forecast, is it's going to be wet. I wouldn't guarantee that up there. The one thing that you can have is you can have every season blown in, and remember, we're over 2 days, we've got more traffic, we've got more riders, we've got more volume of people up on the course. And I managed to catch up with JP Baxter. JP being one of the main men when it comes to setting out the course. So I tell you what, let's not speculate any further. Let's get it from the man with the plan. Let's hear from JP. So here on the Crosscast, as we come up to the next round of the National Trophy, thought who better to get the insider track on the course, the conditions, and just what it's going to be like up there. And just as importantly, whether or not Bruce Dalton needs to pack the wetsuit or the mankini. It's JP. JP, how are you?
I'm good, Neil. How are you?
I'm okay. A bit scarred by the mental image of Bruce in a mankini, but other than that, doing good.
Yeah, it's a bit early in the morning for that visual impact there, mate, you know. But, yeah, I think you should pack both, probably. Yeah, his mankini and his wetsuit. So, yeah, it's Scotland and the weather can be four seasons collective in one day. So, yep, I think we're going to need all clothing, tyre.
And how is it looking in terms of the course? Because last year we had an unseasonably dry run into it, and hopefully had a little bit more rain and made it a bit more proper cross, as people would say.
Well, yeah, I think last year, I mean, the weather was beautiful, the blue sky, the high pressure, but I think this year, judging by the long range forecast and maybe a bit more moisture involved, there'll be a bit of rain coming in towards the middle of next week. So I think we're going to see different conditions. I mean, our course does drain really, really well, Matt, so it's very unlikely to be a quagmire, but I think it will be different from last year's fast and dry course. So change a couple of bits. So we've basically got the same kind of geography of the course. So we've got the big flat middle section where the pond is, and that by the two hills at either side. So that stays the same. But we've kind of been working on technical aspects that this year. I think last year one of the things that we took away, Matt, was that there wasn't a hell of a lot of dismounts required over the weekend. I mean, the good guys could do a lap easily without dismounting. If you were bunny hopping the hurdles, then you could get round a lap without getting off your bike. So we were conscious of that, and we wanted to kind of try and change that this year. So we've placed in a few more turns in the sand pit. We've got some more. We've got a really steep climb the hillside over towards the sand pit, which I think will be rideable for maybe half on the Saturday, but come Saturday afternoon into Sunday, we kind of we're foreseeing that to be a bit of a run up. It's a very light coating of grass on this steep climb, so I think that grass will disappear pretty rapidly on the Saturday, and with the help of a bit of moisture, I think we'll be looking at a run-up for that. Some more switchbacks, and we've also got a set of steps which we're going to be putting in over towards the start-finish area this year as well. So we're looking for the guys to be dismounting at least two or three times this year, as opposed to once at most last year.
In terms of surface, what's underneath that grass? When it does start to cut up, are they going to go down to sand, or are we going to go through down to earth?
No, on the two hillsides, it's really down towards the earth you're getting. On the flat section, it's sand, and there is some sand actually showing through on some of the flat sections. But on the hillside, yeah, it doesn't take much for that grass to disappear on top, and it can be really slick with any moisture, any rain on the lead up to that. And we've ran races previously on it, you know, kind of regional races, and they've been quite tricky, very tricky. You know, if there's any rain, the grass disappears, and a few switchbacks, you've got to go on your toes, you know. So it should make it more interesting this year.
It was a really big event, village.area, so plenty of infrastructure and caterers and the usual down there?
Oh, yeah, all the guys are coming back, all the good guys, all the food, the beer tent is coming back, which is, obviously pivotal to the weekend. All the same sponsors from last year, these guys have jumped back on again. Massive help, you know, for the infrastructure stuff. The one change in terms of the kind of start-finish straight is that it is going the opposite way. So last year we ran from west to east, and this year it goes the other way. So that allowed us to tweak a couple of things on the course, and I think it will give the spectators a bit of a better view of the riders coming under the gantry. So yeah. But the pits are still the same, the wash area is still the same, and all the good stuff in the event village stayed the same as well. So, yeah.
Sounds really good. Thank you very much, JP, for giving us an insight into the course.
No problem, mate. I'll see you on Friday night. I'll have a beer sitting ready for you, mate. Okay?
Oh, I can't wait. I might hold you to that one.
That's brilliant to hear from JP. I'm really looking forward to racing again. I'm most intrigued actually about what's going to happen on the banking, you know, where it's almost got like a track berm, so you can ride it like as if it's you on a track bike, and then you know, you've got the on camber and then the off camber, and any rain on that is going to completely change. I loved it last year because I really like riding that type of stuff in the dry. I don't know what it's going to be quite like in the wet. Maybe it'll end up being similar to what we saw in York with the campers up there. I really don't know. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I've just got a sneak preview of some of the riders who are going to be there and racing. And it is a bit of a who's who of domestic riders. Take the junior race. We're going to have a really good battle there. I think that junior race got the added rider coming in, Jamie Johnson. Taking to the start on home turf. Jamie, absolutely phenomenal rider. Conor Carrick-Anderson and Dan Barnes, we know, are going to be up there. You think, well, that's pretty good. But then you go to the women's race. How about Anna Flynn, the rider who we've just been talking about having a great race? Kerry McPhee, guest on this show, is going to be able to do battle with Fionn James, who is also back and racing the trophies as well. You think that's good. We've got people like Sophie Thackeray, Joe Tom and Katie Scott. But the pick of the riders for me in the men's race, Charlie Aldridge. Coming through, the European mountain bike champ. The man who makes Bruce look short is going to be here. And he's going to be a racing cross. Anybody want to admit to actually having watched him race cross before?
Never, not for me, I don't think.
Would you bet against him taking the win?
Never.
Have you seen the size of his legs?
Yeah. Charlie is phenomenal. If you haven't followed the mountain bike scene, Charlie's come along and blown everybody away. He's a really, really nice guy, but he is once-in-a-lifetime kind of winner. He's a big guy who can go out and race, but he's got skills. The kid can do anything on a mountain bike. Can he translate that to the cross bike? Well, I'm pretty sure he can. And I think Ian Field, who is our series leader at the moment, is going to have his work cut out, as is Gus van der Meer, who, of course, has also been on the show. Because Gus is going to have mud tyres, because that's the only thing he now bothers bringing to the UK. And if it's dry, like we saw before, that might not be the best option, because if it's muddy and we have the sand, that is going to be a pit nightmare. It's going to be really hard in the pit. It's going to be really hard on the bikes. And it's going to reward somebody like Charlie, who's got loads of power.
Yeah, and it'll be really interesting as well to see if that forms the bunch racing, or is it going to be a case of roadie form versus cyclocross sort of strength, or is it going to be one for a mountain bike? It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, last year there were bunches coming in at about 30 miles an hour into the hurdles. Ben Chilton, I think, managed to eat one of them for breakfast pretty much on his way through before. The bunch speed was really quick because it's so hard. So I think it's going to be some really exciting racing up there. I think the course changes are going to make it even more techie. And we're going to see plenty more riders entering, of course, because we're recording this just before the close of entries. So could well be we see some continental riders taking the trip up there, because they're not going to be riding on the continent.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting race. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to making the trip up, and hopefully this time my van will make it all the way home again. So we'll see how we go this year. It's been another really great fun to record the show. Thanks to the Trinity Rating team for coming in the pits, and of course Helen and JP for giving us their insights into the upcoming races. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We always love to get feedback, and do remember to share and retweet and tell your friends about the Crosscast. Do come and say hello if you see us in Irvine, and remember to subscribe on iTunes, your podcast app. And you can even find us on Spotify, and make sure you give us a like over on Facebook. You can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Bruce, where can we find you?
Find me at Bruce Dalton CX. And Matt, where can we find you?
You can find me going down the corridors on my crutches for most of the time. But you can find me on the internet at Matt Fixer Payne. And don't forget, of course, to give us a follow at The Crosscast as well.
It's been fun as always, and we'll see you all on the other side of the tape. Bye.